Hello, Dennis.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm expanding your visual here, so
I wouldn't do that
hey,
if I knew you.
let's not go there.
A glutton for punishment.
You're supposed to have self-esteem, remember? I
Oh
heard
no,
you talk
don't need any
I
of that
heard you talking
nonsense.
about that.
Don't need any of that nonsense.
To be or not to be.
Absolutely. Indeed.
I was thinking, I wonder if Shakespeare was he thinking about that from a mindfulness perspective, to be or not to be, or probably not.
Well,
Well,
we don't know what he was smoking at the
that's true.
time, do we? How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm flying. Great form. Flying
Going to
form.
be in Fresno next week for my client's Baldrige site visit. They've got five people coming for 3.5 days to interview 60 to 80 people, talk to probably 100 of their staff. It's going to be quite intense, but
Heavy duty stuff, yeah.
I'll be hiding out in their command center, if they're calling it. Better than a war room. They were going to call it a war room. And I said, let's just soften that a bit. Anyways, it's all good.
Oh, that's good. That'll be a bit of an event, and you'll be exhausted after it, but it'll be good exhausted.
Oh, yeah. It's,
Good
yeah.
stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's a real-time opportunity to apply. Mindfulness behaviors, if you want to call it that, or awareness, just being in the flow, not overreacting to things that come up, because oftentimes organizations, as you were talking earlier about overthinking, I oftentimes see collective overthinking, especially with executive leadership groups, where they'll think something through to death almost, and it's and not come away with any more insight than they had.
Oh no, they'll come away with less insight than that because
Exactly.
they end up confusing themselves.
Right.
There's one particular chief executive of a pharma company that I worked with for years, and he'd originally been, well, I think he was originally at the very beginning a lab technician, worked his way up through the organization, but was in charge of project planning at other times, in charge of the production of their biggest selling and biggest money making drug as well. And as a result, everything was thought through to the nth degree. And he used to get annoyed with me. In the end, he softened up, but he'd get annoyed with me because he'd start talking in almost every conversation we had, and I'd say to him, "Hold on, you're getting ahead of yourself. You're overthinking. You're getting ahead of yourself. You're getting ahead of yourself." And that's the problem. We get ahead of ourselves, and suddenly it's like the inverse of, it's like an upside down tree. Your thinking goes off in so many directions that you literally can't see the wood for the tree.
Yeah,
But
there's a
then,
concept lately I've been hearing, holding space for people, and it's almost as if that's kind of the role of the senior leaders, to allow their employees, to allow their workforce to solve their own problems and hold space and not try to micromanage or overthink or, plot out every contingency for every decision, because that's not how the universe works.
well, sir, we know it's not how the universe works. I think, Dennis, particularly in some of the high pressure industries like the manufacturing. Well, sorry, you've worked in the manufacturing of bits for intercontinental ballistic missiles. I've done an awful lot of work in the farm industry. I don't know why. At the outset, I knew nothing about the farm industry. But that's a high pressure business, for a whole load of reasons. starting with Wall Street, which is the wrong reason to start with, actually, but it's the reason they always started with. Need to keep the shareholders happy. Need to start at the other end. What if the eye drops I'm making have plastic particles in them and they go into somebody's eye? So it's a high pressure business. And there is a need for obviously quality control, but there's a need for all the contingency planning that goes around that as well. And yet, when the wheels do fall off something, they go back into this thinking mode and try to think things through, and can't, back to what we said a minute ago, can't see the wood for the trees. I think, on reflection, there definitely needs to be the yin and the yang and the balance between what needs to be done, say, from the highly technical perspective of generating electricity, for example, or making drugs that are injected into people. There has to be a happy medium between the people who actually do the stuff and need to have the technical think through on the one hand, and the people who are charged with leading the whole place. This is an interesting one, actually. Real leaders in organizations are not necessarily, don't necessarily have that name in the organization. Sure, they don't, because they're leaders all over the place in an organization. But real leaders will know when and how to strike the balance, because they know when to go in with 2 feet and they know when to step back and let things happen.
Right. Yeah, I was, as you were talking, what just came to me was, leadership is the art of allowing for elements of organization and chaos. In other words, typically innovation and thinking outside the box will occur without that very structured control type of operating. You know, you make mistakes, you allow people to make mistakes. That's how you learn and innovate. But at the same time, you know, you probably have to have working hours. If everybody worked whenever they wanted to, you probably would have more chaos than you could deal with.
Yeah, particularly in the production and manufacturing and manufacturing environment, but also in the hospitals that you you've worked in. I mean, what if all the doctors and nurses decide, I'm going to work from 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock today?
Right. No, it's true. And so I think leadership in a corporate setting, you know, it's an art as much as a science. I don't know. I think I shared with you a couple of years ago, I taught a graduate school course here in Tucson. On managing organizational change. And it was kind of a leadership 101 for up and coming leaders here in the city of Tucson. And we got into these kind of discussions about not just leadership styles, but ways of creating systems for, I hate to use the word managing, because managing to me is another concept that is not exactly, I like the word leading more than managing, but I think, the aha was there's some actually back and even in the 19th century, some folks who put together management theories as a more organic, holistic approach, realizing that the organization is essentially an organism.
Yeah.
You know, you have people and you have energy and you have all these interactions, but what a leader really do is managing this conglomerate of interacting beings, people, and trying to, or allowing for the resonance or the synergy between all this diverse workforce and trying to, or not trying, but allowing for them to get on the same page. And that's typically why you have goals, objectives, or a vision, a mission, and a values. But I think the emphasis is backwards, or, you know, that sometimes there's more focus on the structure or too much focus and not on allowing the inherent intelligence, wisdom of the workforce to kind of self-direct and correct, which you will if you will step back and allow people to tap into their innate intelligence. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's
it makes sense to me. It doesn't make sense to an awful lot of business people. I'm working with one particular, again, a pharma company at the moment, or at least with one of their leaders. And they're restructuring. You used the word structure a minute ago. And what do they? What's the first thing they did when they started restructuring? Put in a new structure that has no regard to the talent pool that they have. It has regard to we need a structure first. I can't remember. Imagine Steve Wozniak and Steve Jobs coming up with a structure before they come up with the first Apple computer. I mean, standout organizations operate in an entirely different way. But you raise two really important points. One is in relation to managing, because I think a good leader knows the balance, the yin and the yang that we were talking about a minute ago, knows the balance that's to be struck. Because I've seen some really visionary leaders who forget that actually management is part of the leader's role. Because what if you're in an organization, say you're in an organization that has 1,000 people working in it. The probability is that 60 of those people, peppered throughout the organization, will have some sense of how to use their minds properly. And the other 940 of them won't have a clue. So what you're trying to do is herd cats. What you're trying to do is get some kind of glue. And you mentioned planning and mission statements and all that kind of stuff a minute ago. That's the glue that enables the herd generally move in the same direction. But they're crawling in the same direction rather than running, never mind flying or soaring. But leaders often forget, I have to manage these people as well, because, we might have a vision and some people will get it. Most people won't, because they're there for their paycheck, which is an awful thing, but that's another thing altogether. And they have to be managed, because leaders often assume, if I have my vision, others must share the vision with me. And therefore, I don't have to manage them. I kind of can assume that they will do what is expected of them. And the sad thing is you can't, unless you get enough people singing on the from the same hymn sheet, so that you get to a tipping point where the organization, because we know about tipping points, for example, in terms of resonance and the Schumann resonance and meditating together, you reach a tipping point where an organization suddenly clicks, and it clicks because the balance was right all the way through. The other important point, as you mentioned, was innovation. I recollect a chief executive years ago telling me that he wanted my help to develop an innovation culture. I said, those two words don't go together. How can you have a culture that deliberately is structured to provide the means of developing the unstructured? Because innovation is unstructured. Innovation is inspirational. Innovation is aha. Innovation comes from the present mind. It's all about, it's like everything else in life, Dan. It's about balance, isn't it?
Exactly.
So we can't go too far off in one direction either.
Yeah, I think as you were talking, the first hospital, actually it was a health system that won the National Baldrige Award over here in the USA. Their leader was a nun, and she had a process where she got input from 20 different hospitals. It's a health system based in St. Louis, and they had 20 hospitals in 5 states to develop their mission, their vision, and the values. She went down to the frontline people and was appealing to their values and why they chose that health system to work. And what was it that made them passionate and motivational about why they come to work every day, and what about healthcare? You know, it serves patients. And so literally their mission, vision, and values, which typically is written by the CEO or a small group of people at the top,
yep.
She did a bottom-up process that actually was top-down and bottom-up, but they met in the middle and really engaged the workforce because she appealed to the values of people, which it kind of gets down to the heart versus the head. You know, you think you know why you're doing what you're doing, but do you have that passion? Do you have that emotion and connection with the vision, which is, as you call it, I like to call it an organizational perfect moment. You know, you have your own perfect moment, but you can have the vision as the organizational perfect moment. What does it look like out there for the company? And she cleverly created this and got people enthused, and whole organization caught on fire. Again, they were the first to receive their quality award recognition. But I think that's with the younger generations and the generation of millennials and others, they are not there just to make money. Some of them are there because of the purpose or the commitment.
Oh, absolutely.
And therefore they will resign after a year or two, where the baby boomers will hang in there and work for the same company for 40 years. So I think leaders need to be cautious on, especially the older leaders who are still out there and haven't retired, what works for them or did may not be working now. And that shift to a value-based, actually more of a mindfulness approach of that, creating that vision with engagement with people is critical for success. Otherwise, the vision is a hallucination. You know, it's not a vision. It's
a mirage.
Right, exactly.
Actually, hallucination is a better word. Because I know plenty of delusional, hallucinogenic leaders. I've seen them over the years. And, you know, they're going out to war without realizing that there's nobody behind them. Because none of them got the memo, so to speak. Or none of them cared. That's the really interesting thing about high functioning leadership teams or high functioning organizations. The values of the organization or the organism, which is better, because an organization, think of what you do when you set up a company. You incorporate it, you put it into a body, because it doesn't actually have a body. It's no such thing as a corporation.
It's virtual.
but it's enough people agreed that it's there. And a corporation will only be successful and will only continue to be successful as long as most people share the same values. Because the minute, if I was part of a leadership team, the minute my values diverge from the shared values, I shouldn't be there. And I've seen that. One of the very first companies I ever worked with, over the course of maybe 3 or 4 years, and they didn't get me to work with the leadership team. They sent a member of the leadership team on each of my open workshops over the course of about 2 years. And I said to the chairman afterwards, at the end of 2 or 3 years, I said to him, do you realize half the people who came on my workshop from your leadership team left? He said, yeah, it's one of the reasons they were sent to your workshop. They needed to figure out for themselves whether they shared the values of this organization or not. And if they didn't, isn't it better for everybody that it dawned upon them?
Right.
Now, the others who stayed created something really special.
So what I've seen in some of the best practices of these organizations that are what I call value centered, some of which I've worked with, others that I've reviewed as part of my Baldrige work, it's the secret sauce to success. In fact, one that I'm working with right now is very, very value centered, and these organizations typically have high customer satisfaction and engagement, high employee satisfaction and engagement, and they make plenty of money. And it would be interesting to do a a values survey of some sort. I'm just thinking out loud here of companies who feel like they have coherence between the leadership values and the organization's values, and then correlating that to customer satisfaction, employee engagement, and bottom line. And I would be willing to bet, because I've seen it, all of these variables go together, and it's the ones that have lost touch with the values that are losing money, employees don't want to work, and their customers are dissatisfied. And that's my hypothesis premise. So maybe we could do a survey somehow.
Yeah.
Companies in Europe or USA or both, and maybe I could work with the bulge, you could tap in. I'm just thinking out loud, it would be fascinating. Yeah. To correlate this and then
I think
build upon
know,
that.
We both know the answer in advance.
Well, we know the answer. Yeah,
we
but
do,
it would be,
because we've seen it. It'd be nice to have a load of empirical evidence, wouldn't it?
Or work with a leadership school of a university that would be willing to do that kind of research. Because I think that's I don't want to get all cosmic here, but when you look at the planet at the moment and the leadership issues politically, geopolitically, it's the same thing we're just talking about that is causing the dissonance between governments, the people that the leaders supposedly represent, and their decision as leaders of what they think is best for their country. And you got all these leaders kind of up here trying to manipulate each other and become, you know, the king of the hill for the world in various ways, both literally and metaphorically. And the damn people, excuse me, just want to eat, make some money, live, be happy.
Have a bit of
could
fun.
Could care less about who's at the top of the hill. And, you know, this includes the United States, Russia, China, any other European or other, you know, major political forces that the leaders, I think, have lost touch with the values and have even tried to create what they think are the values in their heads of the people they think they're representing. And there's this disconnect, and it's causing all this junk, all this stuff that we're dealing with in the world. It's just, they're clueless.
Now I think you're giving them more credit than some of them actually deserve.
Well, maybe, you know,
because I think some of them are willfully
intentionally manipulating.
Oh, it's worse than that. I think we have sociopaths and psychopaths at the top. Not just. Somebody said to me a while ago, and obviously the pharma company involved, another pharma company will remain nameless. Somebody said to me that their leader, the global leader, was a psychopath. And somebody else said to him, but to get to the top of a global organization, you know, psychopath really needs to be on your CV. And it isn't that some of these people are just clueless, and it isn't their fault. Sorry, I'm not saying it's not their fault either. It's the fault of the madness of the masses.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're doing is tapping into the masses, the madness of the masses, and manipulating the madness of the masses. But the whole system's broke.
It's manipulating what people believe and think, which thought, as you and I both know, is...
A little thought is a very dangerous thing.
Exactly. And then they get into the emotion. So they'll rile people up emotionally with the thought. So the two get connected up here in the neuro pathways, and people start believing things that aren't true. But because it's passionate and they feel strongly about it, they're creating their own reality of a world and a worldview that really isn't based on fact, in my opinion. Somebody's going to say, well, that's your opinion. That's how do you prove
Dennis, I have a set of alternative facts.
You know.
Quote, unquote. You won't go there.
But I agree. I think there's some intentionality of leaders.
Oh,
knowing how the mind works. how mind and emotion works, that if they can pair up strong emotions with these delusional thoughts, then people are often running to the left or the right. And that's what they want, because that duality, that polarity gives them a purpose, a mission, a vision to be against somebody or something. And it's like, wait a minute, how are we going to live on one planet if we just keep creating new enemies, if you want to call it that, or, you know,
I think we
so
know.
I'm getting kind of caught. Like I said, I'm getting a little out there with this.
You know, you mentioned left and right, and they're the obvious dichotomies in the political and nation state environment. But we talked about balance earlier on, and the balance is the center. You know, what do people say when they've meditated or when they've balanced themselves? They've centered themselves. The balance is always in the center.
Exactly.
And the interesting thing is that...
And it's non-judgmental. It's non-judgmental.
And hold on. Go back. Dennis, think about or reflect upon perhaps the University of Massachusetts definition of mindfulness. It's deliberately paying an unusual amount of attention to the present moment, non-judgmentally. Because every time we use our thinking minds, we're judging. And the unfortunate thing is that because of the way we're set up neurologically, every time we use our thinking minds, we are actually prejudiced, because the thoughts we're having are the same thoughts we always had when we're using our minds normally.
And it takes a lot of discipline to have a neutral thought.
It takes a little discipline to have no thought. That's the real prize.
That's the bottom line.
But you know, we talked a few minutes ago about how leaders, maybe it's not their fault, and I don't mean the way to come out the way, because clearly people who are manipulating the masses are to blame. But it's the whole system that is at fault. And if ordinary people acting mindlessly can create that kind of polarity, enough ordinary people operating mindfully can create the opposite. And that's what the Heart Math Institute is about.
Right.
That is what the Transcendental Meditation Organization of the United States was about when they carried out those experiments in the 1990s, about bringing people together, enough people together, so you actually reach a tipping point. So the good news is, and I don't know whether you or I will live to see it, the good news is that it's the mindlessness of the masses that has created the mess. So the mindfulness of the masses would create the opposite.
Totally agree. And I think we're at that potential tipping point, without a doubt. I think it, and it's getting the, I hate to use the word critical, because it's kind of a judgmental assessment, but when you look at the environment, both physically, geopolitically, there's some things happening that, you know, the mindfulness awareness is, it's critical. I'll just say it. I think it is critical at this moment of October 2022. If somebody listens to this 5 years from now, and it's a completely different world than it is in October of 2022, Willie and I are talking about what we're seeing here now, that this is
it's a
critical time we're living in right now, whether we realize it or not.
And it's accelerated. I mean, you're talking about 5 years from now. What about 5 years from now past? Who would have believed the world would have been locked down as a result of some bug? Who would believe that we're back on the brink of nuclear Armageddon? Who would believe that some people who have been in power or who still are in power would ever get their hands near the levers of power? Yeah, I might need to go a little bit further back than 5 years in the case of one or two countries. Name no names, no pack drill.
Yeah, I've intentionally not named any leaders here, because I think this is true. You can have a dysfunctional leader lead a company, lead a school, lead a hospital. It's not just politics that we're talking about, but
That was my point earlier on, Dennis, in relation to the fact that you probably need to be a psychopath to get to the top of some of the world's leading organizations. None of you is listening, I hope.
Well, if you,
or if you are, would you ever wake up?
If you're leading what you call normal, crazy people can be led by, you know, psychopath or crazy leaders.
Absolutely.
So the idea is for the people, in a sense, to wake up and not be so much normal crazy. Because if they're not, they're not going to accept at some point, if you look at what's going on in the Middle East and some other countries right now, there are groups of people who are waking up and say, we're not going to take this any longer. It's not about, you know, how you want to define the politics of their countries, you know, whether democratic or not. It's just the innate freedom that human beings, I think, want to live with, to freely express themselves, which again gets back to the values that we share common human values, that, you know, we want to make sure we have food, water, a safe place to sleep every night, and can express ourselves and do these things that human beings most likely are, I don't want to use the word entitled, but, you know, as being human, you would think we would perhaps be a little more secure than the animals out in the forest, but we, you know, have created an environment that isn't so conducive to humanity's security. And we can't blame anybody but ourselves, basically, because collectively we've allowed this to happen. So now, how about collectively, as you say, let's make this shift and well, help it shift.
The fact of the matter is, collectively, we've caught it into being.
Exactly.
Because every problem in the world started with a thought. Every single problem in the world started with a thought, which means every solution can come from not thinking, but doing what a human being does best. Being. Not called human doings or human thinkings. We're called human beings. And, you know, the tipping point comes not as a result of people getting together. The tipping point comes as a result of enough people developing a coherence in their own energy.
Consciousness.
Yeah.
Which is exciting, because it doesn't mean we all have to get on a plane and fly to the United Nations.
And we don't have to join some group.
And we don't have to get on the internet, actually. I mean, we can do it.
Oh, true.
Wherever we're at. I think the internet actually, though, can facilitate some of this coherence. And it is. There are groups that are meeting virtually. Something you just said that.
An interesting point in relation to, an interesting point in relation to that, because I work with groups of advanced clients. That's a judgment, actually. No, people I've been working with for years who are in a different place to some of the people who I've been working with more recently. And I had two groups of people over the last 4 weeks, and we meditate together. And then they get the meditations that we did together so they can practice them on their own. And without exception, everybody says, it was more profound when we meditated together. Even though I'm listening to exactly the same thing and practicing exactly the same thing afterwards on my own. Why? Because there's a profundity to aligning your energy together. There's a connection. There's an energetic connection.
I think Jesus said once in the Bible, as a Catholic, I kind of remember this, when two or more are gathered in my name.
Oh, yes, indeed.
And I think the name is a vibration and the name is the energy. You know, it's a spoken word, a name. But I think that's probably the more esoteric meaning of that quote. If you've got two people or more and they're gathered, then that energy resonance, you know, is created. And It's like tuning forks. You know, we've talked about this before. You know,
Yep.
one tuning fork can set off another tuning fork. If you put a bunch of grandfather clocks
Yep.
in a room, over time, the grandfather clocks will all start ticking. How does that happen? You know, I mean, this stuff really happens.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I think your quote from the Bible and your interpretation of it isn't esoteric at all. I think that's exactly what was meant.
Yeah, I think he knew. And
exactly.
So I have a question for you, Willie. This is something I've been playing with in my head. I was going to say my head, but it's as much as my whole being. Being in that state, okay, that we're talking about of, quote, no thought. Now, obviously, when we drive a car or we fix a meal, we do mundane things like go to the bathroom. We're thinking, but it's not a thinking in an overthinking, overdrive, forced, controlled way. Thoughts come and we flow and we respond. So I'm trying to come up with the right words for the way of being, saying to be. We need to be without this resistance of trying to make things happen, trying to control, overthinking. But yet, if we're a CEO or a leader, we feel we have this responsibility to make, quote, decisions or act. And typically, most people think that decisions and actions come from thinking. So where I'm going with this, I think the premise needs to change in leadership and even management, that you can make decisions and act intuitively without thinking. You can just know the right thing to do and do it. And you and I, again, I think you probably know where I'm going and you know the answer of what I'm, but I think that's the aha that many so-called managers, leaders, CEOs feel because of their training or what people have told them leadership is. They have to make things happen. They are in charge. You know, all those words of force, control, thinking, decisions, but there is a different way of being. And it can sound woo-woo to some people. So anybody that might be listening to this in the future, give Willie a chance to respond, because I kind of know, I think I know what he's going to say. But that state of being is something we all need to explore as leaders, because there is a different way and it is effective. And some of the best leaders do that. They may not even know they do it.
They may do it instinctively.
Exactly. So your thoughts on, or not thoughts, but your...
You can come at this from all kinds of different directions. Let's go back to the start of the question. When I drive my car, I do it using a program that I learned when I learned to drive my car. And it is my thinking mind that runs that program. And of course, the inherent danger in using my thinking mind to allow myself, for example, tie my shoelaces, is that it leaves the door slightly ajar for the bigger, more intrusive, more disabling, more negative thoughts to come in. But if I'm training my mind, and you and I know the training is meditation, and if that sounds woo-woo, there is now about 25 years of hard science, including neuroscience behind that. The training is meditation to enable you to take control of the bit of equipment between your two ears. You can come at it from a different direction. You can go back to the 1980s and 90s and surveys done with Fortune 500 companies and FTSE 100 companies in the UK, where the chief executives have said, all of my best business decisions were gut instinct decisions and all of my worst ones were thought through. Mainly, I have to hold my hand up on this, there were probably accountants involved in the bad decisions. Or you can come at it from a different direction again. Based on what neuroscience now shows is that when I meditate, I restructure the part of my brain that enables me focus, the attentional spotlight, it doesn't matter what it's called. Well, actually, it does, because the attentional spotlight will always illuminate the way forward for you. Hold that thought for a minute, or that hold that idea for a minute. But we know from the latest research that I also restructure the subcortical brain. This is the bit of my brain that enabled me evaluate exactly where I was and decide exactly what I needed to do in a split second when I was confronted by a man-eating tiger maybe 7,000 or 8,000 years ago. This is what that part of the brain does. It evaluates where I am, it evaluates where I want to go, and it enables me to do just what I need to do without thinking about it. Because if I was confronted 10,000 years ago by a tiger and I had a gut instinct about what I should do and then decided to think about it, I'd be dead. The part of the brain that is redeveloped when we meditate is our what could be loosely called our decision-making paraphernalia. That's the bit of the brain that tells us what we need to do in terms of little choices, big choices, grand choices, even what I need to do today. The number of leaders I've worked with who have said they get up in the morning and they have an instinct that there's something important that they need to do that they knew nothing about the previous day. It's not on a to-do list. It's not on a project plan. And they do it. And subsequently, they discover it was exactly the right thing to do at that moment in time. That's the answer to this. And I've seen leaders, exactly. I've seen whole organizations behave that way. And I mean, I'm not talking about small businesses where, you know, it's a tight team. I'm talking about one or two global organizations. I've actually seen them operate that way. And the interesting thing is, in relation to what you said earlier on, their bottom line was far better than the bottom line of people who are trying to force the issue.
And probably a higher customer satisfaction and employee
engagement. Absolutely.
If it was measured. So the reason I asked that question, I'm playing around with some kind of a dangerous thing, playing with some concepts. You know, I've taught a traditional university-based graduate school leadership course that I think for some had value, but when I'm thinking about what we're talking about, there really needs to be a new paradigm, some guiding principles for senior leaders, executives, whoever, anybody that has a leadership. And I'm thinking, how could that be packaged or presented in a way? It could be on the internet, it could be through Zoom sessions. And I'm not going to think it into existence. I've decided.
Look, sorry, just said, Dennis, I'm thinking about how it could be packaged and delivered. Now,
but I'm contradicting because I'm allowing it organically to kind of emerge through however it's choosing to do. I'm sharing it with you.
Yeah.
I'm thinking now about it as I share it with you, but have I thought it out? No.
Yeah, but no, what you've done is articulated it out loud.
Right.
Yeah, a different thing altogether.
Intuitively, it is based on all the things we've been talking about today. Some of these insights, ahas on leadership, but yet I think there's some things that are collaboration, however that, you know, might emerge over time, might...
You don't think too much about it.
No, because this stuff can just happen. But
Dennis,
we're in a critical time right now, and people are, I think, grasping for what has worked in the past isn't working anymore. Yeah. You know, Einstein made that. What's the quote of Einstein? Thinking that created a problem isn't going to be the solution to get you out of it. And this intuitive way of being in the flow and knowing what to do without thinking it through, I hate to use the word trained, but modeled, probably better word is modeled, for people to understand. It's not as hard as people think it is to shift from overdriving the car and overthinking and trying to control everything to surrendering, letting go, the letting go to succeed concept of, you know, your class, your course, you know, is the epitome. But leaders, I think right now are really struggling with this. And they don't know what the heck to do.
Well, I think it is the easiest thing. It's the easiest thing in the world to let happen when you understand why you need to do it. Right. That's why the science behind meditation is so important. Because if we don't do it, not only are we contributing to the chaos, we're actually missing our own lives as they pass us by because we're buried in thought. And, you know, a lot of the leaders with whom I've worked who would find themselves doing things intuitively, as I mentioned a minute ago, will often find themselves doing the intuitive because they ask themselves before they went to bed the previous night, what's the next most important thing I need to do? It's an open question that I encourage anybody with whom I work to ask themselves. And maybe you and I need to ask ourselves that question.
Right. Yeah, the brain is an amazing instrument, and the mind, you know, another quote, ask and you shall receive. Typically, you know, people don't ask, so they don't know. But if you ask, go to sleep, you wake up in the morning knowing, or you might wake up in the middle of the night with a download.
Absolutely.
Happens to me typically at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'll wake up wide awake and write some things down on my iPhone and go back to sleep. And it was like a download in the middle of the night.
Well, we all know that it's the thinking mind that falls asleep at night. So the intuitive mind comes to the surface when we're asleep. So, you know, the old adage that we should sleep on stuff, it's actually scientifically proven in a piece of research in 2013. Actually, the research finishes off with, you know, the sentence. The old adage that if you have something important, some important decision to make, you should sleep on it, has been scientifically validated. But meditation has taken that forward. That's 9 years ago at this stage. Meditation, because it restructures the decision-making stuff in the subcortical brain, it means we don't need to even sleep on it anymore. We can make those decisions and choices intuitively in real time. And that's that's the letting go bit that you're talking about, Dennis.
The old days before people were aware of meditation, only chance to get to shut down the thoughts was go to sleep. So, but now you realize you don't need to go to sleep. You can meditate, and, you know.
Well, that's why I don't know what time of the day I know you meditate. I meditate in the morning. I encourage people to meditate in the morning. And I discourage people from meditating after about 7 or 8 p.m. in the evening. Because meditation doesn't push you asleep. It doesn't switch you off. Meditation turns you on.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to have to head, Dennis.
Oh, no problem. I think we let the seeds germinate here as we have done before, but I don't know. I'm starting to feel some urgency about getting the word out in some way that folks can have a little roadmap. You're doing this every day, all the time with your podcasts and but I feel like there's maybe some other ways of getting the word out and helping folks navigate through the chaos out there right now
Well, neither you or I will figure out the answer to that, because figuring out involves the thinking mind. We need to be struck by lightning. Yeah. And the only way you'll be struck by lightning is standing out in it.
Yep, that's true. All right, Willie, well, Dennis, I appreciate your time.
And yours. I'll put the audio of this online tomorrow morning, my time, just before your bedtime tonight. We'll see where it goes. Obviously, we'll send it out to the group on being a conscious leader. And I'll send it out to some other people as well. We need to nail our proposition to the cathedral door.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Okay.
All right.
Dennis, stay cool. Stay present. Enjoy yourself. I'll see you soon. See you soon. Bye-bye. Bye. Bye.